Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning. Morning. Welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 till 12, live here, Sheffield in the workstation on Paternoster Row. You've got Julian Paul here in the studio. We'll be talking to our PG later on in this hour. We've also got our guest speaker for this week. If you tuned in last week, you'll have heard him talking about his personal journey with his telescope and what a journey it was. This week he's back. It's the first Saturday of the month. It's Phil Muffett, Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society. Talking about Eye on the Sky at the minute is at Manvers Waterfront Boat Club. I think he's repairing dragon boats. What a busy life he leads. Next Saturday, and indeed every second Saturday of the month, all being well, we should have Dr. Ogo Osamo on the line. Before we go any further, let me remind you of the Yorkshire Photographic Unit exhibition at the Danham Gallery, Library and Museum in Doncaster. It's on until the 5th of July. It's free. It's fantastic. Hundreds of photographs on display from clubs across Yorkshire, including Sheffield Photographic Society. It's well worth a visit anyway. A great cafe too. So in the science news this week then.
A Chelsea flower show garden has been relocated to a community centre in Hull. The Songbird Survival Garden won a silver gilt medal at the show and has been reconstructed with the help of volunteers at the Neighbourhood Network Centre on Goodhart Road, Bransholm. The garden is part of a wider project at the site to overhaul the existing outdoor space for the local community.
Yeah, a lot of the show gardens do get relocated, which is great, but they'll need a lot of upkeep, I fear. A geology tour guide has discovered a fossilised dinosaur footprint believed to be 170 years old along the coast near Whitby. Steve Cousins, also known as the Rock Showman, was taking a school trip on an educational fossil work at Saltwick Bay when he noticed the imprint in a sandstone rock. The fossil, believed to be a stegosaur footprint, is now on display at nearby Whitby Holiday Park's Jet Bistro and is free for the public to visit. To verify the discovery, a paleontologist geologist Dr. Liam Herring's show used an app to take a 3D scan of the rock. And basically he said that middle Jurassic footprint bearing sandstones are found in rocks across the North Yorkmoors and along the tops of many of the cliffs along the North Yorkshire coast. So keep your eye out if you're in that area.
And then, three council-owned buildings in Rotherham will undergo upgrades funded by a £265,000 government grant to cut carbon emissions. Springwell Gardens, 115 Middle Lane South and Swinton Customer Service Centre and Library will be fitted with low-carbon heat pumps, smart-controlled LED lighting, solar panels, improved insulation, double glazing and water-saving fixtures. A fourth building, Peacock Lodge Children's Home, will be upgraded using council funding after narrowly missing eligibility for the grant from the Public Sector Decarbonisation Scheme. The total cost of the scheme is estimated at £422,000, with the council contributing around £156,000 from its decarbonisation budget. It is expected to cut around 30 tonnes of carbon emissions each year, contributing to Rotherham Council's commitment to its operations being net zero by 2030. Cost reductions will not be as significant, with the council anticipating yearly energy savings across the four sites to be about £3,800.
Well done, Rotherham, eh? Another one, the truth about collagen. I found this very interesting. A wellness buzzword is collagen, but it's a protein our bodies make to support and strengthen our skin, muscles and bones. But as we age, our bodies produce less collagen. Eating foods like beans, berries, leafy greens, chicken and eggs can help make more collagen, or get it in supplement form, which may help your body absorb it faster. Good advice there.
What is coherent breathing?
Well, indeed.
Yes.
Come on.
This simple, slow, controlled breathing technique involves inhales and exhales of the same length, and it is thought to help manage stress and anxiety. Aim to take 5 slow breaths per minute with your eyes open or closed. Give it a try on your next morning commute or from your desk at work.
Oh, so there you go. And finally in this bit, petal power. Farmers turn to wildflowers to save their crops. I found this an interesting one. Farmers seeking to protect their orchards from one of the most devastating pests in nature are cultivating a new weapon, flowers. The rosy apple aphid feeds on the sap of apple trees and has the power to decimate crops, but that power can be reduced by planting native wildflowers in apple orchards, attracting teams of helpful insects that prey on the aphids. The practice can save farmers up to £3,000 per hectare per year, according to a study published in Agricultural Economics back in April. Predators such as ladywings, hoverwings and lacewings can reduce damage from the rosy apple aphid by up to 32% in particularly bad years. Now, Nigel Jenner of fruit producers AM Fresh works with about 30% of the UK's apple growers, has been advising them to plant flower strips in their orchards. I'm recommending it to everyone, he said. There's no downside. He described the results of the study as a ray of sunshine. The cost of fruit production, he says, is huge, and everyone wants to buy the perfect apple, so that's what we've got to produce. And that's another issue as well. But if we can harness nature to do that, reduce our costs and help the environment at the same time, that's got to be the way forward. Fantastic stuff, eh?
Every time.
Nice track, that Wildflower live track by the Cults, of all things. And we played that because we're talking about petal power, farmers turning to wildflowers to save their crops, particularly apples. Very interesting stuff. You're, of course, listening to Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 till 12. We should have RPG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning. Morning.
Yes, how are you?
Yes, I'm surviving well, I think.
Excellent. Dodging the rain showers that we so badly need, to be fair.
Yes, yeah. Hopefully we can capture them and keep them.
Well, indeed. The reservoirs are still pretty low, by all accounts.
Yeah, we're still playing catch-up, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's caught your eye in the science news this week, then, Paul?
Well, if you enjoy a good book, I think a lot of us do. It was an article that sort of caught my eye. It was about an exhibition recently at the research studio in the Wardlaw Museum. And it highlighted some of the problems that you can find and introduced a research tool for the identification of poisonous books.
Oh, I say.
Yeah, so pigments used to colour books historically often contained hazardous substances. So they pose risks with handling, and notably arsenic was combined with copper to form a bright green pigment called emerald green, which was prevalent in a lot of 19th century books. It's a vivid green, so it was really popular. And it was used in lots of items, everyday items, clothing, artificial flowers, wallpaper, paint, sweet wrappers, and even cake decorations.
Blimey.
So, yeah.
Good grief.
It's sort of amazing. And there was another version of Scheller's Green, I think, at the time. But museums and libraries worldwide have been the items that these books are. It says that realistically what they've done now is, in some cases, is isolate huge batches of books while they work out what's the best way to actually manage them. And it's one of those things that sort of triggered me a thought around quite a few things over recent years or past couple of hundred years that, as mentioned here, it was this arsenic coloration was used in wallpaper, and it was one of those conspiracy theory things about the death of Napoleon. It went off to the Isle of Elba, and he got very ill. He was sick. Eventually, it was declared that he died of stomach cancer, but he'd been given keepsakes of hair, and people had taken keepsakes of his hair. And when those were found and analysed by scientists in later days, they found high levels of arsenic in his system. So, of course, conspiracy theorists already said, oh, well, you know, basically they bumped him off so he wouldn't come back because he'd obviously been banished once and made a comeback. So it was that. But when they sort of investigated his residence when he was in exile, he got this arsenic green wallpaper.
Ah, yeah. Mm.
And this stuff can come off as fumes or as flakes. And what they discovered with arsenic is that you can actually build up a resilience to it by low-level exposure over a long time. So he was held in captivity for quite a long time, and in a room where quite often he was in bed because he was ill, with arsenic green wallpaper. So, some of the things that you see that start out with the best intentions can cause problems. So I was sort of thinking about that, and I thought back to actually a chap who used to work with us down there at the station some time, and he wrote a play, and the play was about the Canary Girls, and it was something that happened in the First World War, and as more and more men went to the fighting at the front, girls were employed in musicians' factories, and they were working with TNT. And TNT contained picric acid, and over a time, it started to turn their skins bright yellow.
Wow.
And because it's acting upon the melanin in your skin, so a bit like these sort of get your suntan quick creams.
No. Not to but, be recommended, Paul, I wouldn't say now.
No, it's, I mean, the danger it could lead to is sort of liver failure, anemia, and immune system problems. And a thing that kind of reinforced that is because the UK, I think, in the last couple of years, said that they're going to reopen about 5 munitions factories to bring our armed forces' supplies of munitions up to a good standard for the current world supply.
Yeah.
But Canary Girls, and then that sort of bumped me on to Radium Girls. And in the 1920s, they quite often painted walls to have glow-in-the-dark males figures. And these girls were also known as... Again, for the First World War, America got a tremendous demand for dials that glow dark. So for people fighting in the trenches, a lot of things in the dark, all the time.
We're sort of losing. We're losing you a bit, Paul, ever so slightly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's our end or your end.
Okay, I think I'm not doing anything other than I've been
It's not
doing,
the cats, so. Is it, interfering?
No, I don't think so. He usually lets me know quite vocally.
Brilliant. You sound a lot better now, so it's either I've done something or you've done something.
Okay, well, the Radium Girls, or Glow-in-the-Dark Girls, they started to use radium for painting the clock dials and things, and they noticed a side effect in that... their clothes would glow, and if they went out dancing, they were sort of noticeable.
Oh!
Once they noticed the effect, some of them even went to the extent of painting their teeth with the radium, so they got glow-in-the-dark smiles.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
It kind of didn't turn out to be a great idea, because I think there's a sad case, really, of it. One of the girls that worked on this was Amelia, commonly known as Molly Maggia. And she found out that she had a toothache, and that led to having a tooth removed. And then she developed a cyst and pus in the space where the tooth had been, had to have another tooth removed. She got bleeding gums. And things eventually that led to her having to have a lower jaw removed.
Yeah.
See, she sadly she died in 1922, and was mistakenly confused death as due to syphilis. Which, it waited until 1925 that a test was developed that proved conclusively that the problem was actually the radium that was used for painting clock dials. And you kind of sort of worry about that. But, we've seen it quite a few times from the 1950s to 1990s, widely used in building materials and some engineering places, was asbestos.
Yeah, indeed,
Which was a wonderful sort of fireproof material. It's great for fire. So it appeared in so many places and in building, in places like schools, which sadly they started to realise that people working with that material developed asbestosis, which was due to the fibres they inhaled causing their lungs to react. And it's got a modern day counterpart now, which again has got an older starting base, but quartz worktops in your kitchen.
Yeah.
There's been a big upsurge of problems with the workers who cut out the sort of holes for sinks and actually cut them to size. And that's due to inhalation of the dust, which causes silicosis. And I've got a family connection to silicosis, which is my grandfather, who was what they called a saddle grinder. And they used to grind scythe and sickle blades where you had a sandstone wheel, or a gritstone wheel, sorry, that spun around, and you had a plank where you sat on and sort of leaned forward over the and used that sort of material to sharpen the blades, but actually produced a dust. And even though they ran water onto the wheel constantly to reduce the temperatures, my granddad developed silicosis because of the work that he did, and eventually had to retire, which it wasn't actually just the silicosis, because that was still something that they were sort of getting to grips with, but also a problem for them with the grinding wheels was that occasionally they'd fracture, which happened to my granddad, and it blew him upwards through two stories of the building.
Good grief! And he survived. He survived that, did he?
He did, but obviously that finished his working career, and
good
in that
grief.
He went on to be a pub landlord for a good few years after that.
Wow! But the buffer girls similarly
had absolutely,
similar problems, weren't they?
Well, again, locally, the people at Sheffield Independent Film produced a documentary called Diamonds in Brown Paper, which is about the buffer girls. And the reference is that because of the dust that came off the wheels they used for polishing cutlery, it was a fibrous mop that they used, and fluff used to blow off that. So they used to wrap themselves around the legs and around the front. They used to wear an apron made out of brown paper. And they'd have a scarf hiding their hair to stop collecting the dust. But obviously, they were at risk from that. So lots of things. Strange things as well. There was a fad for a glowing green-coloured glass, which was called uranium glass. And the thing was that a lot of the time that was a low-level amount, but some of the examples with higher colour concentrations were actually registrable on a Geiger counter and had a long-term low emission of radiation.
Blimey, eh?
All those kind of trendy toys that you think about, and it's a lot of danger, so be careful, it can be a poisonous world, I guess.
Well, but the thing is, back then, they probably didn't quite realise, did they?
Well, I think quite often, you know, in science we see things, I think, you know, things are used by accident, so a lot of plastics were a byproduct. Post-it notes were a byproduct of trying to solve another problem, and they found out that they could coat this glue onto paper, and it could peel on and peel off. So they made tremendously useful post-it notes.
The other thing we were just thinking about in the studio was lead in paint as well, and in toys.
Yeah,
can you believe?
Well, I think I had to take care, because again, I think the first house that we bought had doors that were painted to look like a wood. They used to call it scubbing, And it was actually a varnish over a base coat, which they then sort of used a tool to make pretend grain for the wood effect. And the underlying paint quite often was lead paint.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to get your paint off and you use a blowtorch, you're in danger of releasing lead. Yeah. So you have to be very careful about dealing with it. And again, some of the kitchen paints used to be a green colour.
Oh, I know. Fascinating. So if you go in a lot of the old, you know, old houses and the, the papers are lead or the arsenic, you know, they're coloured because that's how they did it, isn't it? But, whoa.
Yeah, it's, you know, quite often we used what was thought to be natural elements to produce dyes. And it wasn't until later we started to get more chemical substances to create dyes and colours. So,
the wisdom of technology and identification techniques. And you've chosen a cracking track, Paul, to go with your subject today. You're getting good at this, aren't you? Poison, Alice Cooper. Very good. Yeah. Great stuff, Paul. We'll speak to you Monday,
Thank
Glories,
you.
Rock Show, 1 till 3. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Poison running through my veins.
Kind of Poison there from Alex Cooper, because RPG was talking about the dangers of years gone by, arsenic and copper in your wallpaper and stuff like that. All good stuff. You're, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday from 11 till 12 o'clock. We should have our Phil Moffitt on the line.
I wish I was a spaceman, the fastest guy alive. I'd fly you round the universe in Fireball XL5. Way out in space together, conquerors of the sky. My heart would be a fireball.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Good morning, live from Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, eh?
Yes.
On location, sounding loud and clear in your van as well.
Good, yes, I'm out in the van.
Excellent. I'm
doing boat maintenance this morning.
So they've let you off for a few minutes, have they?
Yeah, yes.
So you've skived off. So
just started raining, so
you're happy.
Shelter as well.
So last week when we spoke to you about your journey with your telescope, fascinating as that was, you were talking about an event last week at Manvers Waterfront Boat Club. And
yeah, we it was a Sheffield Children's Hospital, and we made about £5,000 out of it.
Wow.
From the teams that entered, and then obviously I don't know how much money they've raised, but they've all obviously raised.
Yeah, so that's for the that's for the Children's yes. Hospital charity, isn't yeah. it? Fascinating
so
stuff.
They pay us to rent the boats, and then we marshal it and run the event and provide all our facilities, which is what they pay for.
Yeah.
And then they make their money through sponsorship.
And so, of course you're doing all the safety cover and
the safety boats.
Providing the boats. So
it was a really good event, and it was sunny. We really enjoyed it. It was very windy, so it was very choppy. So we nearly lost a couple of boats to the water. So there were some very wet people.
Oh, because that lake's not going to be that warm, is it?
Well, it is. It's about 17 degrees.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It's warm to the hand. The thing is, though, warning to people that do open water swimming, we do this with lifeguards,
yes.
wetsuits and tow floats. Beware people that go swimming in shorts, getting cold, no safety equipment, no yeah. safety. If you drowned, and there's no coming back.
No, well, there isn't, and that's wise words, because you've got safety cover. It's yes. all about doing it in groups as well, because
yes.
open water swimming has become a bit more popular, hasn't it, in recent
well, yeah.
times?
I mean, on a weekend, we'll have, like, on a Saturday, there could be 150 people in the water.
Wow.
I mean, we might have 10 people on safety cover in a yeah. boat, on the shore, and out on kayaks and paddleboards, just for safety. Well, the key wow. thing is we're wearing either wetsuit, but then there's people that go in skins, they have tow floats. So if you do come unstuck, and I did a couple of years ago, you've got a tow float and then somebody can rescue you.
Yeah.
So my incident was I didn't nearly drown. I took on water in the waves because the wind got up, and that's another hazard, the waves.
It is. As I felt, yeah, you
I
know.
Swallowed. Quite a considerable amount.
Yeah, as a sailor myself, well, both of us, don't underestimate the power of nature.
No.
In terms of water, wind, you know.
And the other thing is, you can be on the bank and you get one effect. When you're out in the lake, 20 metres out, the water's yeah. completely different to yes. what is on the bank. Yeah. And it's easy to get caught out.
For the sailors,
which is why we have yeah. all the safety gear and life jackets.
Offshore winds, onshore winds yeah. can look very different.
Yeah. And then there's undercurrents. We have currents in the lake. When you swim round, the water temperature can change by about 3 degrees, depending yeah. on whereabouts you are swimming around the lake.
Yeah. Is it quite a big lake then? I guess it is for dragon boats.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we've got it'll be about 800,000 metres long, I think.
Whoa.
And probably about 500.
So next week, you've got Bluebell Wood charity as well coming.
Beginning next month.
Oh, beginning next month.
I can't remember what date it is, right, beginning next month. So wow. I've got a boat to prepare.
Oh, I see. And you have to squeeze in time to talk to us about Eye on the Sky.
Yeah. So it should be quite a good month this month. The evenings are a lot warmer. And you might even get out in your shirt sleeves.
Ooh.
the problem is it's not getting dark while half 11, 12 o'clock. So it kind of alters your shift pattern, as it was, because it's like, I've usually had a drink by about 10 o'clock. And it's not advisable to go drinking and then go out observing, because you might see a lot of double stars.
Brilliant.
But no, it's like the 21st of June we get the summer solstice, so it's the lightest day. But we get the constellations are coming round now. Things like we've got a Libra, which is a very faint constellation, and it's only small. And we've also got Scorpius coming up, and with Virgo still up, looking due south. Really interesting constellations with lots of measure objects, galaxies, nebulae and stuff like that in them. So and at this time of the year, it's when to observe them, because they're really low down on the horizon. So around midnight, it's the highest they get in the sky. So
right.
There's things like Antares, the rival of Mars. It's the alpha star in Scorpius. It's a really, really bright red star. And it'll be due south probably about midnight later on in the month. And there's also a measure object next to it called M4, which is a big globular cluster. And it's only in the summer you can really, really see this. And then with it being low down, if you've got any street lighting, it's another hazard. But yeah, on the 9th and 10th of June, the moon is near full, and it's on the right-hand side of it on the 9th, and it's on the left-hand side of it on the 10th. So if you want to see the bright star Antares, look for the moon, and it will be next, really, really close to the moon. And the other thing is, at the end of this month, on the 28th and 29th, the moon is a crescent, and it's really, really close to Mars. Now, Mars is starting to set in the evening, and it's in the constellation of Leo, and it's really close to the bright star Regulus. So that's another thing to watch out for. So, yeah.
It's a nice time
to observe, but it's late. You're going to be out 12, 1 o'clock in the morning.
This is what you're saying. This time of year, it's not your really favourite time of year, is it? Because you're having to stay up late.
It's nice to observe. It's nice observing 8, 9, 10 o'clock in an evening. It's a really nice time to observe that. And then you've still got a little bit of an evening left. Now, it's like you do your sports, you do your tea, you do your TV, have a drink, and then... Well,
and then go out.
Do I want to go out? Do I want to get all my kit out? And
yeah,
set it up
and
at
go
like
out.
Quarter to 12 for an hour, you know.
I suppose you've got to decide if it's worth going.
Yes,
out.
Well, that's the other thing. It's not been very good this past couple of weeks.
Is that because the weather's been unsettled?
It has been very, very unsettled. The few times it's looked as though the sky's going to clear, and then it's kind of come over all moody.
Yeah, well, it's the jet. I think it's the jet streams doing all sorts, isn't it? Dragging stuff across to us.
Yeah, it's really not good. I've not done any photography for about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's just not being suitable. But it's unusual. I just hope we haven't lost the summer.
Well, everybody's saying the climate and everything. It's been a bizarre year. Somebody said to me the other day that the strawberries are all too early, and there'll be none for Wimbledon. Everything's been early, hasn't it? I mean, is your lake at Manvers that temperature? Is that right?
Well, April, it has peaked. It has got hotter quicker. April, May, we've had a couple of new record temperatures.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of cooled off a little bit. But, I mean, it's still 17 degrees now. But we had an 18 degrees temperature about 6 weeks ago. So, it's really high. The amount of sunshine, we had more in April. Anyway, see what happens.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. Have you got any events coming up at your club, Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society?
We're planning on doing some Sunday afternoon observing sessions up at the observatory. We are just installing a new, how can I put this? It's not a ramp, it's a landing, a level entrance, level access into our observatory. And a disabled parking, not bay, but footpath, so you can park a car, get out of your car, on a flat.
And make it easier.
We did have a ramp into the building, but we think it was a bit too steep, and there's also a lip to get over as well. So what we've decided to do is level it off and have the so it's not a ramp, so you can get off the out of your car. Because it's slightly slope inside, we've altered the level so you can get in
much easier. Yeah.
Easier. So we're trying to get that done. Well, we've done two concrete pours. We've got one left to finish. We'll probably do some time next week. And then that should be good for the next couple of weeks when we're going to start doing observing afternoons.
So you're doing them every... How often are you doing
Sunday,
them?
There'll be Sunday afternoons. Right. Look on our webpage and there'll be some dates and times you can come
on. So that's msas.org.uk. Yeah. But they do get booked up quickly, don't they?
Well, the Sunday afternoon sessions, we'll probably have a couple of telescopes out on the concrete pad. And then we might... If there's a lot of interest, we might have the shutter open so people can look through the clubs.
Oh, for the actual observatory roof, yeah. Oh.
It all depends on the weather and if we get many people. Sometimes we get lots of people up there, sometimes we get a trickle of people. But some people visit the Hoover Stand, so we sometimes get visitors from Hoover Stand coming and visiting.
Because you're very close, you're literally across, if people know where Hoover Stand is, you're literally across the road, and you can't miss your observatory because it's got this big white dome.
Yeah. If you visit Hoover Stand, you'll pass our building.
Yeah. I remember...
If you go to Hoover Stand, you'll see it, no problem.
I remember us once visiting, and it must have been summer because you looked up and there were tons of flies on your inside of the dome. Yes. Have you got rid of them then?
Yes. Yeah. What happens is, when the weather's cold, they come under the lip and they kind of hibernate, and then as it warms up, they'll start getting active and fly off. But the thing is, if we've got any in the building and you want to open it up at night time, it's a bit of a handful.
Yeah.
But we have got a fly zapper in the observatory. sometimes it smells of flying fly.
Flying fly, yeah. Well, what can you do? It's you because you're in that sort of area, aren't you?
It's difficult to make it airtight when you've got when it's got to spin round.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder how these big observatories go on with things like, I don't know, bats and flies and other things that get into buildings.
Well, you don't know, do you? So, are you still doing talks at the observatory? I know you do them online.
We're not doing the PVEs in the evenings are more of a winter thing. So we do the solar Sundays.
So the public viewing evenings, that's a winter thing. So you can go early evening.
The problem is once you get past April, I can't observe until gone 11 o'clock, and people don't want to bring the kids out.
No.
So it's all down to the stars.
Of course, these solar Sundays, it's like the ones you have at RSPB Oldmoor. The weather dependent, aren't they? You can't guarantee that it's going to be lovely conditions.
Well, we're also doing a Sunday event at Wentworth on the field.
Oh, are you?
They're doing a village fete, so we've had an invite to go and do that.
Ooh, well, you're very special, aren't you, Phil? You're getting around a bit now, aren't you?
Oh, it's not just me. It's a club. It's a club event. So we'll have a little marquee there, a gazebo, and we'll have a couple of telescopes there for people to look
at. Do you know what date that is?
Oh, I can't remember.
I'll get Paul on it to have a look at your website. Yeah. So that's Wentworth Woodhouse. Obviously, they've got the flower show coming up.
It's a village fair.
Oh, right.
It's not in the Woodhouse.
Actually the village fair? Oh, I say. Right. Interesting.
So they used to have it. They used to have a village fair, and then they did some in the grounds of the house. I think this year they're doing it back on the playing field.
My, interesting. I know where that is. Yeah, back of the car park.
Yeah, it's back of the Rockingham Arms.
Yeah, it's where they used to play football. I don't know if they play football.
Yes,
it
there's
is.
There's a cricket field, football field, and a dog walking field, I think.
Right, we'll check out your website.
There's also a bowling green as well.
Yeah, you do get around a bit. But are you doing any more events at Wentworth Woodhouse, then? Because you sometimes do special events. You've done them at the Camellia House.
I'm doing one for next year, I think it's February next year. but that's a long way away.
And what are you going to talk about there then? Is is that just an open evening?
I'm not sure yet. I'll be doing a lecture on something.
Right, we found the details. Sunday the 6th of July is your Wentworth Village Day. Excellent. So you'll be basically you'll have a stall, but will you actually have viewing equipment and stuff?
Yeah. We'll have a range of telescopes.
Wow.
So we've got telescopes to see things in different wavelengths. So it'll not just be normal white. We've also got one where you can see hydrogen alpha, and also calcium. So you can see the sun in different colours.
Wow.
And different wavelengths will show you different layers of the sun surface. So, it will be different.
Wow.
We've got a couple of really, really good telescopes.
Brilliant.
That we can see different things.
So, these are the things you would do at Clifton Park as well? Is that
yes.
the similar? I know one got cancelled. That was a weather thing, wasn't it?
It's
a shame.
Was it back in February? I think it was January or February.
Yeah, it's weather, really isn't it? But they're usually popular because Clifton Park's a really nice venue as well, isn't it?
It is. The Wall Garden at the back of the museum's lovely. It's quite modern.
Good old Rotherham, that's what I say. Apart from the street lighting.
Yeah.
But that's another matter.
That's another matter.
We won't go there. So anything else coming up, like meteor showers or anything exciting like that?
Later in the year. To be honest, it's too bright. Well, it's like the sun's been quite active this week. There's been two days of really, really intense aurora. But you can't see it. I tried to do some photograph it a couple of days ago, and all I've got is a light blue sky. And while we had an aurora, was it Wednesday night? I think it was Wednesday night. I tried photographing it, and all you do is get a pale blue sky and stars. The aurora's not bright enough to see through at this time of year. So we missed a really good show, and it's just down. There's also some clouds dodging about as well. So it was not bright enough. It just shows you how faint aurora are.
Well,
and why you only see them around winter time. Because if the sky's in the slightest bit bright, you just can't see them.
You just can't see, no. So very, very interesting. So when we get to the solstice then, is that an interesting time for astronomers? Is that what marks?
Well, that's as far north as the sun gets in the sky on the ecliptic. So after the 21st, it starts to get lower each day a little bit, and the days start getting a little bit shorter, likewise. So the evenings start getting darker earlier. But it's not while August, you'll probably notice. But August is a really nice time for observing because it's nice and warm. And it's starting to get
you said it. Yeah, you've said this before. If you were just going to get into astronomy, when would you get into it? Going into autumn?
Probably August into autumn, yes.
Something new to...
Yeah, and it's comfortable to go out and observe. If you start if you get a telescope for Christmas and then you go out in January,
it is
the harshest time to possibly do astronomy. And if you're out for any length of time, you'll get disinterested.
Yeah.
It's harsh. It really is.
So last week you were talking. I'm going to let you go in a bit because you've got work to do.
It's okay.
Talking about your telescope last week. You know, you're on a mission to photograph particularly distant objects. But are you also interested in photographing the sun, or is that not really your thing?
Well, I've got a solar. I bought a solar filter only a couple of months ago to observe the partial eclipse. I got a couple of nice photographs of the moon and sunspots on the sun. But it is a niche thing, and it's the same with the planets. If you're going to photograph things like Mars and Saturn, it's a bit of a niche technique, and it's the same with Jupiter. Some people do absolute stunning photographs of Jupiter and Saturn. It's a lot of experience. And this is one of the things about books and magazines. They show you these lovely glossy pictures, and you think you can go and buy a telescope and then just take pictures.
No,
so much harder, really. Some of these people are doing lots of images and then stacking them and then cleaning them up through computer programs, and it's a bit of an art, and it's a skill as well. It's tricky. It's not easy.
So people generally specialise then. So you've gone one route, and other people, I know Mick Nichols, people like that, specialise in sun.
Yeah. I mean, Mick Nichols is absolutely brilliant, solar images, but he's been doing it for a long time, and you do perfect techniques.
Yeah.
And you also hone your equipment as well. It's not one size fits all.
No.
And it's like with galaxies. I'm trying to photograph nebulae and dark, faint things. And you kind of want a telescope to suit that kind of imagery, whereas you probably want a big refractor to get the best out of the planets. So the moon again, it's another niche thing. Some people specialise on the moon, get some terrific photographs of the moon. But yeah, you can get a good image, but if you want a really good image, it takes some practice.
You've got to specialise into your field. So do you ever go around as a club and look at, you know, if somebody's like mixed into sun, you're into galaxies, somebody else is into moon, do you ever go round and see what they're, how they do it? Or
when we have get together, sometimes people bring the kit along. If we have a meeting observatory and we specifically want to observe something, you know, and we share ideas at club meetings and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so we've got a pretty good idea what people have got.
Yeah, because you're learning from each other, aren't you? And for people, you have guest speakers as well from all over the world sharing the latest, I guess, research.
That's right. And it's why we've got some really good photographers in the club. It's because they're picking up all these ideas and tips and how to do things and process things. You learn stuff all the time. It's like we've been doing this concreting for a pad. It's like there's so many things to do in astronomy. And it's like 95% preparation, things and getting somewhere. And then it's 5% actually looking at stuff, taking observations, doing notes or whatever. That is just the tip of the iceberg. It's all the other stuff you've got to do, whether in a club or at home, before you actually get to that point.
You always said this about, you know, if you're just starting out, you need to work out exactly what you want to look at, where it's good. Is it in the right place? Can you actually see it before you're going to waste your time going out? Because you're going to be disappointed if you don't put your work in, aren't you?
That's true. I mean, I've got a 4-inch Celestron, 4.5-inch Celestron, and I've adapted it so it fits onto my new mount. And it's a general all-round telescope, but I can only do so much with it. If you want really faint, big objects using a DSLR camera, you need a big reflecting Newtonian. If you're going to do planetary stuff, moon, sun, you want a big refractor. So you can't get a reflector to do the same stuff as a refractor. And it's like the optics and the mirrors all work in different ways to get your best results. So, you can see things, but depending on what you want to see, it depends on, particularly on the equipment.
And
then there's things like filters as well. There's filters out there to pull things out as well. So,
money to be made, Phil, money to be spent.
It's a lifelong hobby.
Well, it's more than a hobby, isn't it? It's actually a lot. It's a social thing.
It is. It's a really good thing to be involved with. Really good.
Yeah, it's like any group. You talk about Manvers Waterfront Boat Club. It's a social thing where you come together and you've got a shared interest. It's either on the water or astronomy, and it's good all round, isn't it? And you're continually learning.
Know something, there'll be somebody knows what.
Yeah,
what to do.
Is there lots of jealousy in between you all? Who gets the best pictures? And look at that! Have they done that?
Well, I won't say jealousy, but it's kind of envy, perhaps. Yeah, envy. More like, a bit of envy. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Great.
But it's good that we can share stuff.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, being in a club, when you've like put certain things on Facebook or whatever on the web page, it's kind of shared. It's kind of shared knowledge, so it's kind of our thing.
Yeah, all good stuff. I'm going to let you get back to do some work.
It's not stopped raining yet.
Oh, aren't it? You can talk. No, it's not raining. Have you had any what you had to eat today then? Interesting. Bacon?
I had a bacon sandwich and a cup of coffee.
Have you been running as well?
Well, I've not run this morning so that I can do some work.
Do you know, I don't know. I keep telling you need to retire.
Yes, I do. I'm getting... I'm getting close.
But before you retire, you need to go into the other departments in Rotherham and get your street lighting sorted out before you leave.
I do, don't you?
Because once you're gone,
well,
you're working.
To be honest, I've tried something. I've got a pole with a big square, a cardboard. My wife got a bike earlier on this year, and it came in a massive cardboard box.
Mm.
So I've got this. I've got half a cardboard box, about 3 feet by 5 feet in size.
Do you know?
And I've stuck a pole through it, and then I've tied. I don't know if I should be telling this. I've tied it to the greenhouse while my wife's watching TV, and I can just about block all the light
can
out
you?
Of the street light.
Yeah. So, what a life you lead. Eh?
I'm thinking of getting a scaffolding pole and a couple of brackets. And then I'm thinking if I can erect it at the bottom of the garden.
You get locked
to
up.
Blank the street light out when I need to and then take it down during daytime.
Brilliant. I love it.
I'm working on that.
We'll have to let you go. But at least you're recycling packaging.
Yes.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Phil. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for giving us your time.
And
once again,
you
bye-bye.
Not me, 'cause I see she's creeping like a hungry cat.